It's Football at 4 on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
It is our pleasure to welcome Dalton Reisner from Wiggins, Colorado to the show. Dalton and C-Mac with Chad Brown. Good afternoon. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on, fellas. It's always a pleasure, man.
Man, it is awesome to have you here. When is your official visit with the Broncos?
I already had it. I had it last week.
How was it?
So I just had that last Wednesday and Thursday, sir.
How, stay in a hotel?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. I got in, had a ride straight to the hotel, got myself some dinner, woke up the next day, got some breakfast, and then had a full day at the Denver Broncos facility, man.
Did mom and dad come down at all to sort of check in, or... How'd that
no,
go?
That's not how these visits go, man. I got in at 9:30 or 10, and then had to hit the hay and then wake up early and get going with interviews, and then they hop you on a flight right back. And I've been kind of flying across the country, so you're really back to back with all these visits.
Oh, I think mom could have given you a little hug down at the Starbucks at Peoria and Arapahoe before you get on that plane. It's all right, though. I understand. All right, so
I think they probably could have done that. I don't know why they didn't. You have to talk to them about that.
Mark. What were you a Broncos fan growing up?
Oh, most definitely. You know, I was a Broncos fan through the Jay Plummer days, man. I know all about the Broncos.
Okay. Why didn't you end up playing college football in Colorado?
Well, when it came to recruiting, you know, Colorado didn't offer until way late, so okay. They just really weren't in the picture. They just didn't offer me. Whenever it came to Colorado State, I really loved Colorado State. That was one of my top three teams. That was a school that I talked to my parents about going to.
Yeah.
I just kind of got the offer from Kansas State, and that was a very hard offer to pass up, just with a program that I felt like I fit into and a coaching staff that I felt was amazing. So nothing against Colorado State, nothing against Colorado. I just felt like the best and biggest opportunity was for me down in Kansas State, man.
All right, Dalton. Now, I took some trips before I was drafted. Feels like 50 years ago now. But I'm assuming the process has changed. Tell us about what other teams you visited and take us a little bit inside those visits. Were you interviewed? Were you put on the whiteboard? How detailed into the football did these visits get into?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of all across the board. You know, you either have teams come visit you, and then they get to work you out. If they come down to your school, they get to work you out. So they get to see your flexibility. They get to see how you move. They also get to get you on the whiteboard, take you out for a meal. That's how it works when they come to you. But when you go to them, there is no working out. So it's a lot more interviews. But the difference is that you get to shake hands with the head coach. You get to talk to Fangio. You get to sit down with the general manager, John Elway. You get to sit down with the offensive line coach, Coach Munchak, and Coach Cooper. And you get in depth and you start talking ball. You know, these guys want to know, one, they want to know what type of guy you are. They want to see your character. Do you know football? Do you love football? And it's a process. You know, you get to sit down with everyone across the stack. You get around some of the players, you get a tour of the facility. The most important thing is with your position coach, I would say. I know that they don't have the final call on draft day.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's more of a general manager head coach, but getting in front of an offensive line coach and showing them how much you know about football, that's extremely important. And then not only that, but watching film with them, seeing how coachable you are. You know, they're going to show bad plays. They want to see, are you going to blame your guard? Are you going to blame your head coach for calling the wrong play? Are you going to own up and realize that you can't be perfect? So it's kind of all across the board, but I've definitely been learning a lot more as every day goes on.
You were one of only 5 3-year captains at Kansas State, which is very impressive. And I'm going to guess, and I guess I'm asking you how influential it was to have your dad be your coach in terms of football and leadership.
Yeah, first off, I appreciate that, man. You know, that's something I take a lot of pride in. Out of anything that I accomplished at Kansas State, by far, that's what I'm most proud about, was being able to do that. You know, it's a player's vote. You know, I got that when I was 19 years old. That was really, really special, man. And, you know, I learned a ton from both my parents, not only my father, but both my parents growing up, just in terms of what a true leader looks like and how it's not only raising your fist in front of the cameras and trying to look good. It's about earning the respect of your teammates. And you do that by working your tail off and making sure that you're doing everything right. Because if you're going to hold your teammates accountable, you better be doing things right first. And, you know, both my parents, of course, my father as a coach, he instilled those things in me. But my mom was right there as well. And she was the one talking about how you treat your teammates and the type of person you are on and off the field. And I believe that all that plays into leadership. So, you know, hats off to them. And then, you know, I didn't show up at Kansas State this perfect crafted leader, and I'm not still. But my coaches at Kansas State and Coach Snyder and Coach Dickey, my O-line coach, they transformed me as well. So a lot of kudos to them.
Well, I'm going to guess that led you to establishing your foundation. Why don't you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah. I appreciate y'all asking about that, fellas. You know, I decided that I was going to come back for my fifth season at K-State. And, you know, me and my father were talking about leaving a legacy. You know, we want to really leave a mark at Kansas State. How was Dalton Risner going to be remembered? How was our last name going to be remembered in college football? And we're a big family that believes in how you treat people and the type of person you are off the field. I love this game of football. I hope I play for 50 years. I'm playing when I'm 70. But let's be honest, it's going to end for everybody. It's going to end for Tom Brady. It ended for John Elway. It'll end for me someday. And what matters to me is the way I treat people off the field. And that's what my foundation is. It's a really special foundation. It's a nonprofit 501(c), different than any other foundation in my mind, because it doesn't have one cause. It's not directed to just kids that have cancer or the Boys and Girls Club of America. The Risner Up Foundation is dedicated to making a positive impact in someone's life. And whether that's being a big brother to someone with cancer or being a big brother to someone that has a special needs, or, you know, helping out kids that get bullied, or giving kids from 1A schools around the nation hope that they can go accomplish anything that they want to. It's anything, you know. It's all about helping people and using this platform I have with football to be a good role model and make a positive impact rather than being a bad role model and having a negative impact.
Hey, Dalton, could you give us the information how we could find out more about your foundation, a phone number, a website? And then one last football question for you. I know you played right tackle and center at Kansas State. What are teams looking at you for the NFL? Were they projecting you as an offensive line position?
Yes, sir. You know, first off, with the foundation, you can find that at risnerup.com. It's a website that I just came out with that's pretty special. There's a contact us page within the foundation's website that you can contact me or my mom, who is my secretary. My dad is my treasurer, and I have two brothers that are directors, so it's a family foundation. And I'd love to hear from anybody and be able to help people out with questions. And two, it's so funny, fellas. You know, every team has a different need in the NFL, whether that's left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, or right tackle. And what I think is awesome about my ability is that I feel comfortable. It's one thing to say, hey, I feel, you know, I can do this. But to actually feel comfortable playing that position, which I do, you know, it helps me out a ton. So every team's been different. You know, there's been teams that already have two tackle spots filled, and they say, we want you to be interior. And then there's teams that have interior figured out, and they say, you're a pure right tackle, and we might even move you to left. So every team's been different, and every team has a need. And the cool thing with me is that, you know, I tell them, well, listen, coach, where's your need? Oh, it's left guard? Well, coach, I'm going to be the best dang left guard that you got. I can promise you that. Oh, you know, your need center? Let me show you, coach. I can snap. Watch. I can show you. I can snap here real quick. So that's kind of an element of my game that I've taken a lot of pride in these last 4 months and tried to, you know, tell coaches that that's something I bring to the table.
Let me take a wild guess. You're a communications major at Kansas State.
Yes, sir.
Well, hey, listen.
That's pretty funny.
Us communication majors got to stick together, Dalton. Okay, we can.
Okay,
we can tell who each other are from a mile away.
I got you, man.
All right, it's summertime. Nothing's really going on. You're in Wiggins, Colorado. You're 17. What's the spot?
You know, the spot in Wiggins, Colorado, you know, we had bonfires.
We did stuff like that. It was just one of those towns where you play sports, whether it's basketball, you maybe play football. That's just what you do, man. You play sports, you hang out at each other's houses. You're going to have a little basketball tournament on the court at my house. You're going to go drive to the lake. You know, you're going to have a bonfire in someone's sink and pasture. You might go cow tipping. You might go cattle over at the...
Wait, hold on. Dalton, have you officially tipped a cow?
I have not officially tipped a cow, man. It's false. You can't tip a cow over, man. It's not real. Don't believe anything you hear.
I saw it on Tommy Boy. You gotta.
There's no one. Oh, you saw it on Tommy Boy.
So it must be real.
I saw it on Tommy Boy, right.
That is correct.
It must be real.
Dalton, it's a no-brainer for the Broncos to take you if that comes. It's just so tricky to know where you're going to go. And I have seen you, I haven't seen you anywhere deeper than a little bit into the second round, first of all. So, you know what, Dalton, I will just keep my fingers crossed and say, wouldn't that be awesome? But it's going to be awesome for you no matter what. And you've earned this opportunity and you're making Colorado proud. So we just wish you the best in what's going to be a really exciting couple weeks for you here before you go into pro football. So congratulations, and we'll see. But it would be awesome to have you as part of the Broncos.
I really appreciate that, man. That means a lot, and I would be honored to be a part of a program like that and play for the coaching staff that I just met. Yeah. And I'll keep my fingers crossed as well. But at the end of the day, you know, wherever I end up, I know that I'm going to make the people behind me proud, and I'm going to be able to put on that helmet and go play. And if it's not the Broncos, you know, if I ever come visit, I'll make John Elway wish that he drafted me.
Nice.
All right, Dalton, we appreciate it. Best of luck. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, fellas. Have a good one, man.
You too. Good kid. Like that guy quite a bit.
First of all, the intangibles through the roof.
Yes.
Let's talk football. First team All-American CBS Sports Sporting News, Pro Football Focus ESPN. Big 12 Offensive Lineman of the Year, Coaches Poll. Big first team All-Big 12 Coaches Associated Press. Campbell Trophy Finalist. You want me to keep going? There's like 50 of these things. The football aspect, 6'5", 305 pounds, versatile up and down the line. And that, what you just heard.
Kid's got his head screwed on straight, and he can play some football.
But he's in a weird spot for the Broncos, depending on what they do.
True.
All right. What are those scenarios? We can get to them next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Our boy Johnny Hart, Johnny Love, he's coming in here to throw his two cents in about instant replay. Seen that with Chad Brown. I mean, and the national championship game, I mean, was instant replay just, was it just like too much? I mean, was it just like, it was too much minutia?
If it touched his finger, it touched his finger.
If it touches, but I can't argue with that.
I don't think there's any way to argue with it.
There's not, unless you think, oh, come on.
No, if there's replay, that's all there is to it. It touches finger, touches finger. If you wish there wasn't replay because it wasn't apparent with the naked eye, then that's fine.
Yeah, I know.
But if you have replay,
you can't have it both ways.
No, you can't.
Even though it looks one way, and because we'd be sitting there. There's no replay, and oh my God, it touched his hand, and they didn't get it. That's why, like, if the referees don't call something, or there's not a stoppage, like that double dribble that should have been a double dribble,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty tough. I mean, you can't just stop the game and go back like that.
No.
You know?
There's got to be a stoppage for basketball. Yeah.
But once there's a stoppage, get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Galarraga should have had a perfect game, and Joyce, the umpire, screwed it up.
It happens. Sucks when it happens to you.
It does.
It's your team, but it happens.
So the question is, you know, how do we want sports? It's a good question. How do you really want your sports? Do you want it with the human nature of things, which inevitably is going to lead to some mistakes, some unbelievable, just like the New Orleans Saints and the Rams, and you know, maybe the. I mean, do you want that or not? I always say you should play a sport, or sports should be run as if it was invented yesterday, meaning don't be beholden of things of the past. If you invented this sport yesterday, what would the rules be based on everything at your disposal? Like, if baseball was invented yesterday, would we really have umpires calling balls and strikes?
You sure shouldn't. We have technology in place where there's no reason for that.
I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's actually insane with the technology they have in every single ballpark, where it's pretty cool what they have now. As soon as a home run's hit, there's the distance, there's the exit velocity, there's the launch angle. You know, can you imagine watching a baseball game and you can't see how fast the pitch is? Or where the location is on the, you know, the computer sort of strike zone?
They've been doing that for so long, it's now part of the game.
It's hard to imagine if you go to a live game, you're like, whoa. Where's the strike zone stuff?
Right.
No, I'm kind of bored here.
So I'm a fan of instant replay because the purpose is to correct the bad call, the wrong call. That's why I'm a fan of opening up more plays as, you know, so many teams try to start that process with proposed rule changes in the NFL this offseason. Let's open up more places. Let's open up every single play to it, if you want to go with the Bill Belichick model, to make sure we get it right. Now, I don't think there should be endless replays. There needs to be a flow to the game. There needs to be some kind of pacing to it. And it's a televised product, so it needs to be able to finish on time. But give every coach two challenges per half. Let them correct whatever plays they want to correct, or challenge whatever plays they want to challenge.
Kyle Korver wrote an article for, what is this?
Players Tribune.
Players Tribune. And it's called Privileged. It's about being a white NBA player. He has some interesting revelations in it, and we'll give you some of those details next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Hi, welcome to it. It's D-Max.
Sing a song for the broken hearted.
With Chad Brown. Seeing a little Tiger on TV. The Masters gets going this week. How about that? That's kind of snuck up on everybody. By the way, I saw we're supposed to have another bomb cyclone over the next couple days.
Really?
Yeah. But it might be more like northeast Colorado, not the metro area. Although it's definitely supposed to be a little bit colder. You ready for one last bomb cyclone before the end of the year?
No, I'm not. No. Not at all.
You're not excited about the possibilities of a bomb cyclone?
I missed the last one. I got stuck in L.A. I couldn't get a flight back. All the flights were canceled. So I was out in L.A. for a couple of extra days. So, you know, it wasn't the worst thing in the world.
But okay.
To answer your question, no, I'm not ready.
All right.
I'm done with snow.
Yeah.
I hear the birds chirping when I wake up in the morning.
Oh, the trees are blooming all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once I hear the birds chirping, I'm not expecting any more snow.
Kyle Korver wrote a lengthy article called Privileged, where he described his experience in the NBA, and it deals with a teammate of his who he saw assaulted by a police officer, or he knew about it. I'm sorry, he didn't see it, but he was close with his friend, and it happened, and it was a whole thing. And he writes about how initially he blamed his teammate for getting into it, and then when he thought deeper about it, he sort of saw other reasons for it. And part of the article was because, as a member of the Utah Jazz, there was the incident with the racist comments hurled to Russell Westbrook.
Correct.
And the Jazz's response to it. And one of his comments was, the NBA is 75% African-American, and I can line up behind my brothers who I play in the NBA with, but if I choose to, I can always slip into the background. And that's how he described his existence as being privileged, that he has a choice in that matter, where most of the players in the NBA don't. So it's making him look at different things in society just differently. What'd you think of the article and his perspective on that?
I thought it was good. I thought it was it came from a good perspective in explaining the evolution of his thoughts. Because even after his teammate had his leg broken by the police officer, he still hadn't, that was not enough to open his eyes. It was the incident with Russell Westbrook that was the incident that opened his eyes, but because his first reaction was, Well, Russell always talks stuff. It must have been Russell's fault.
Mm-hmm.
He did not realize the amount and the extent of racist comments hurled at players of color in the NBA. Because it had never happened to him. Which is natural. It hadn't happened to you. And it's very easy to grow up thinking that cops never lie. Cops don't ever abuse people of color. It's easy to fall into that thinking. So my situation is a little different than his because I am both black and white. I'm not a white guy in a black world. I'm both black and white. My mother's white. My dad is black. So I've always straddled this line and seen both sides of these kind of things my entire life. So go ahead and explaining the article.
Oh, that's more or less what it was about. So.
So it's always been an interesting place for me to kind of straddle both worlds, be comfortable in either world, but sometimes straddle both worlds and be able to see the conversations and hear the words of, you know, people who would not say those same things if I were just one or the other. You know what I mean? People in the dorms in CU would not say things if my black roommate was there, but they would say things if I was there. Somehow my light skin made them more comfortable to say those things. And then the reverse things happened as well. Being in a room full of black guys, they certainly felt far more comfortable saying their thoughts about, you know, racism and white folks than they would if they thought I was, you know, not at least part black.
So do you find yourself consistently offended or hands off about everything?
I think you know my personality well enough to know that I have a nuanced approach. I can see both sides of it. Corver is not wrong to see life as his life has been. Doesn't make him a racist to think or to not react and be all up in arms that his teammate had his leg broken by a cop because, you know, what were you doing at a nightclub at 1 in the morning? It's very easy to blame the victim in those circumstances. I wouldn't have been there. I was preparing for a game. I was back at the hotel. Mm-hmm. I was getting my rest. I was whatever. So it's very easy to blame those. But once you begin to shift your perspective a little bit and realize some of these things are just factually true. Mm. Higher incarceration rates, you know, all those kinds of things are just factually true. And you begin to gain some perspective because you're like Kyle, a white guy in a black world, or like myself, where you're constantly in between both worlds and you see the ramifications of both sides of things. It opens your eyes. It should give you some fresh perspective and it should make you realize that no, these people aren't just making these things up. These are real incidences. These are real things that are happening.
Is this an important article?
I think so, but the folks who, in some sense, he's preaching to the choir. The folks who need to read this article and understand it, they're not going to read this article.
Mm.
The folks who read the article and go, yeah, I completely agree, they're already there. Is he going to convert people because of this? There may be a rare few, but we are at a very polarizing time in our country where people are very firmly entrenched in their views. And whether it's political, whether it's talking about racism, people feel very comfortable in their views, no matter which side of that they're on.
Mm-hmm.
So is this going to be talked about on the nightly news tonight and people are going to be swayed and there's going to be a movement based on this article? No, not at all. It's nice that he said it.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice that a white guy in the NBA can come out and say these things.
I was struck, by the way, when with all the kneeling stuff that went on, how, I mean, it really was just the black players that were involved. I can't think of maybe more than one or two white players that even joined in. And the NBA was different than the NFL, obviously. And it doesn't seem to even be all that big of an issue right now, to be honest with you. Although it was a big issue not so long ago. So it makes me wonder if maybe this is really written for more professional athletes to understand what their peers are actually maybe going through.
Okay, so I went to the NFL Speakers Bureau at USC, and one of the breakout sessions was about social justice and racial issues because we're going to, you know, we're all going to be speaking about this. A lot of guys do broadcasting, so they had a breakout session on it. And the couple white guys in the room felt compelled to, at CU, I took lots of African-American studies classes.
Mm-hmm.
But as you would guess at CU, not everybody in an African-American studies class at CU is going to be African-American.
Oh, of course not. Right.
Most of the class is going to be full of white kids.
Most likely.
So the sense of I guess, guilt and responsibility, which are words that Carver uses in this article, would reverberate throughout the classroom. At some point, almost every white student felt the need to apologize and kind of lay themselves out to bear the guilt and the sins of their ancestors. And that same thing happened at the USC Speakersboro with these couple of white players. And that's kind of what Kyle Carver, he talks and touches on those same kind of things there. So, yeah, if you're a white athlete and you happen to read this, should it give you some perspective? Should it give you some pause? Should it give you some insight? I would hope so.
It's a good article. Recommend that you read it. It was interesting. It was sent to me by a high school coach who I appreciate. And just one of those moments where it makes you just think a little bit and maybe think a little bit differently. And I don't know how that's a bad thing to open up your mind every now and then. When we come back, Derek Wolfe says he wants to be a Bronco for life. Do the Broncos owe him something? We'll dig into it next.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Hear from C-Mac with Chad Brown. It's one of these weird these OTA press conferences are always kind of odd. You know what? Before we get to Derek Wolfe, let me go to Royce Freeman real quick. Royce Freeman about himself and Phil Lindsay.
Last year was a great 1-2 punch. I think that we complement each other very well. He goes out there and he does his thing, and then I feel I can go out and do the same. So I think that we both have the mindset of no matter who's in the game, we're both able to accomplish what the offense needs and trade off either or.
What do you think about the running back room, Chad?
I like those two guys. I like those two guys, and I've said it so many times on air. When you have two different backs with two different skill sets, it doubles up the number of running plays because defensively they look different even though it's the exact same play. Mm. And let's face it, as dynamic as Phillip is, as good of an inside runner as he is, he's not a move the pile kind of guy. Royce Freeman clearly has that ability. And as we talked yesterday about having a wide receiver room where not everybody can run all the routes, but within everybody in the room, you can run all the routes. I think from your running back room, you want that same type of skill set, not from one guy, but from everybody in the room. And Royce Freeman and Phillip give you that, catching balls out of the backfield, moving the pile, being a pass blocker, all those kind of skill sets. You want that in one room.
And he talks about how competitive they are. And
I think that's the type of person I am. I always wanted to see my brother succeed, and he earned it. He went out there and he played so fierce and competitively, but also the competitive nature in both of us pushing each other. I think that's what's actually important, because even when I was down, you know, kind of helping him out and telling him what I saw on the field or, you know, these areas, and he would do the same for me. And I think that's the competitive nature as well as the helpful mindset we have in the running back room.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that great?
That's what you want. Early in my career, to be with LaVon Kirkland, another young inside linebacker in Pittsburgh, we competed against each other, but we also tried our best to make each other better. Mm. And we began to take pride of what was thought of us as a duo. How did teams prepare for us? What can we do? And it was great. You know, if it's my turn to set him up on a blitz, I'm going to do my best job because I want you to get home on the blitz. And if it's his turn, then he set me up perfectly. So it was a competitive thing where we both raised each other's levels, but it was also a brotherhood where we were each other's best cheerleader at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Royce is talking about there.
I love the running back room for the Broncos. I love everything about it.
Do you like Janovich now?
Yeah, I mean, it was never a personal thing about him. I mean, everybody thinks it was a personal thing. It wasn't.
If we had 22 Janos, we would be all right.
It's more that if you're going to have that guy, then use him. And I would get the, the game book.
The post-game game notes, yes.
Yes, and it'd be 70 offensive plays, you know.
General play six.
And yes.
Like, what are we doing?
What are we doing? Like, what is the... He becomes a specialist, not a player. So if you want to look at, you know, the dude from the Patriots, what's his name?
Devlin?
Devlin. Yeah. First of all, Devlin is like 20, 25 pounds heavier than Andy Janovich. I mean, just start there physically. So, because everybody always likes to say, oh, look, they use a fullback. And they do. But if you're going to have a fullback, no offense to Andy Janovich, then I think you just kind of need a bigger guy. Or whatever. He's probably fine. I just don't understand if you're going to have him on the field, use him. That's all. If he's going to be on the team, use him.
If he dresses for the game, he has to have a role, not a minor role, but a big role. Because if it's going to be three or four short yardage goal line snaps, they get an extra defensive lineman.
I know.
To do that.
You can, that's what's the point.
Get an extra tight end to do that.
Right.
So I push back facetiously messing with you about him, but your point is correct. If you're dressing on game day, we need more than seven plays of production out of you.
Right. So it's really, I hope people realize, he probably hates my guts, but it's nothing personal against him. If anything, I'm actually really
advocating for him to be on the field
more. Yes. Yes. And the problem is, he's so great on special teams. Not really. Not compared to Cody Latimer, Kayvon Webster, David Bruton, or just guys who are, faster. Because ultimately, as long as you have a certain amount of strength, special teams basically is about speed. And he's okay. He's an okay special teams guy. I don't know. It's nothing personal against Janovich. Use him more. And you tell me, in this Scangarello West Coast offense, you tell me, how does Andy Janovich fit in? I got Joe Flacco. We're doing the whole thing. How does Andy Janovich fit in? You tell me.
Who has the highest paid fullback in the NFL? The 49ers.
Okay.
They took the guy from Baltimore out there when Kyle Shanahan got that job. John Lynch gave him a tremendous deal.
Okay.
So where's Scangarello coming from? From Kyle Shanahan's tree?
That's right.
The fullback is an important part of the West Coast offense if you want to use him in that way.
Well, then use him.
Right. Well, I think we will see him this year. I think we will see a return to more power football based on what the Patriots did in the postseason and the tail end of the regular season.
Cool.
But I think from this particular team and this particular style of offense and the fact that they have a fullback who's not just a Devlin, who can just a pounded guy, but it can catch passes and present some matchup issues with linebackers and safeties.
Awesome.
I see them using him much more this year.
Great. Then we're all good. It's all good. It's awesome. More Jano. 22 Janos. How about 44 Janos?
If we had 22 Janos, we would be all right.
Do it!
Do you think he knew that was going to be a drop as soon as it left his lips?
I knew it was.
It's going to live on forever.
I knew it was. I didn't have any doubts about it. I was there at that moment, and there's like a little twinkle and a little upturn of my mouth, and I'm like, because it's the yeah. breathless.
Yes.
It's a little, listen, a little pause.
If we had 22 Janos, we would be all right.
I mean, it's actually two pauses.
Yes.
There's the pause in the beginning and then the dramatic pause.
If we had 22 Janos.
Pause.
We would be all right.
Right, because he's really feeling strongly about what he's saying. He's putting some drama in that statement.
Unfortunately for Brock Olivo, it was an indication of how out of touch he was at being the head special teams coach. He really was just, it was all too much for that dude.
That was a terrible, terrible special teams year. It was so awful.
God, it was so bad. You realize the only guy who didn't get fired last year was Tom McMahon, the special teams coach for the Broncos. He's like, well, I mean, Bill Kohler didn't get fired. Yeah. I mean, there's guys like that. But in terms of the head coach, OC, DC, Tom McMahon, the special teams is so much better. By the way, that is one of the reasons, too, that they really don't have a punt returner right now. And you know how I feel. I want a punt catcher more than a punt returner. But that being said, N'Keal Harry is a punt returner. I don't think DK Metcalf is.
It's hard to... He's so straight line. I'm not sure if he'd be effective.
Unlikely.
Yeah.
N'Keal Harry has some stunning punt returns. And, you know, this watch the punt return ASU against USC N'Keal Harry. It's freaking ridiculous. And in that game, N'Keal Harry made a better one-hand catch than Odell Beckham made.
He did. He did.
It's probably, if you don't think it's one of the greatest catches you've ever seen, period, you're on a different planet.
He's a very, very talented receiver. I think he's going to be a great NFL player. The fact that he plays special teams presents such an upside for him. And I think his ability to make contested catches that we talked about yesterday, that is a skill that directly translates to the NFL, the contested catch radius kind of thing.
Yeah, he's all about that, whereas Metcalf really isn't.
No.
And I know the Broncos are interested in wide receivers, and John Elway did go down, and he stuck around for an extra day to go at ASU's Pro Day. So, I mean, we'll see. You know, we had Dalton Risner on, and if you missed that, I think we're going to replay it again in about an hour or so, 5:45 or so. It was really, really good. But the tricky part with talking with Dalton Risner is, how in the world do you get Dalton Risner if you're the Broncos?
You pick too early, and then you pick too late.
Right. He's right in that middle area. He's right. He's probably going to go 22 to 38, something like that, which is, Broncos are at 41-10.
Mm-hmm.
So do you take him at 10? He's not specifically a tackle, although he made a pretty good case for himself. And what are we doing? Are we really taking a tackle at 10?
I heard about this mock that is projecting that.
Yeah, Joel Klatt.
That's right. It was Joel.
Likes Andre Dillard. I mean, I get it. Nobody likes Garrett Bowles.
Holds.
Right. Led the country in college in holding.
Yep.
Led the pros in holding.
Yep.
Can't say you didn't see it coming.
We're completely surprised.
What?
You shouldn't be.
But again, this is, who are we? What are we doing? Are we really just throwing guys away? Are we?
Is that throwing a guy away? It is literally.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's a first round pick. You're screwing yourself out of the fifth year option. And listen, if you can't, here's where I stand on the first round guys, they get 3 years. And if it doesn't work out after 3 years, then okay. But my goodness, this is another one. When you invest a lot of money, time, capital, Chad, holy cow, you got to give this a shot, man.
2 years, what, typically players make their most improvement from year one to year two.
Okay.
Late this last season. What did you see from Garrett Bowles that made you think he was actually better?
Nothing.
Okay.
So, but like, so what? Okay, all right. So, all right, fine. Let's play this game. It's an offensive lineman or Devin White. Need them both. What are we doing?
I don't know.
Because we ran, the plan with Brandon Marshall actually expired at the time that we thought it was going to expire.
Right.
I mean, that actually happened the way it was supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the year, logically, plan-wise, we would be replacing Brandon Marshall. That lines up perfectly. The end. You want to go chase an offensive lineman now? So what does that do to you over here?
You have to chase offensive linemen now in football. Because we've seen what happens when you try to go the free agency route and shore up your tackle position. That doesn't work.
Mark has all sorts of thoughts about it. Of course he loves it. But at what cost, Mark?
It's your daily exclamation mark with Mark Schlereth. Brought to you by Shomp BMW.
All right, well, 16 days, I think, until the NFL draft. And a lot of people assuming or talking about what the Broncos need. Our own Joe Klatt, this is what he had to say about the Broncos situation and where they should go.
Number 10, Andre Dillard. What Denver needs, they need offensive line help. I think Andre Dillard's the best available offensive lineman because he's sticky. Whether it's pass blocking, which he did a lot of at Washington State, or in the run game, he never lets his man get off. He's always sticky. He's always getting the block. He's maybe not the best road grader, if you will. Not a mauler, but he's a terrific player.
So talking about the left tackle position and the fact that the Broncos need to address the offensive line, something that I've been talking about for years here in Denver, Colorado. That offensive line has got to be better. Joe Flacco, if he is in fact the guy that you're going down the road with, if he is in fact exactly what you said, as John Elway said, he's in his prime, he's just entering his prime right now, then you're going to have to address the offensive line. You're going to have to address that position. The one thing that scares me about Andre Dillard, he's played in that you know, spread offense of Mike Leach, that they call it the air raid offense. And I'm telling you what, never in a three-point stance, pass pro just about on every single play. No real run blocking, no coming off the football, which is not what Rich Scangarello does with his offense. Completely different offensive perspectives and philosophical approaches. But I do agree with Joel in this. You are rebuilding. You do need to invest in offensive linemen that can play. So Andre Dillard, just another name to talk about when we talk about the NFL draft that's coming up in 16 days. Man, I'm getting excited for this. I'm getting excited to see how the Broncos build their football team and how they make it better so that in September they compete when they get their cleats on the grass.
Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans tomorrow morning at 6 on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.